Well, I guess it's kind of my fault. We haven't had an episode in our normal schedule there, Kevin.
Yeah, we missed a week.
Yeah. I actually do want to kind of apologize to our listeners on that real quick.
Shame. Shame.
Yeah.
Shame. I'm ringing the bell, the shame bell.
Yes, I'm seeing this, but I'm not walking down the street naked. Sorry. I don't think our listeners want to see that either, but obviously this is my busy time in real life, and I had some other real life things happen with a family member going into the hospital, so luckily things are worked out.
You are totally excused, sir. Understood. We have to adult sometimes.
Yeah, but I just wanted to, you know, just give a shout out to our listeners, and, you know, some of you who knew what was going on gave me some great support, and I just really appreciated it. So with that, Kevin, I was wondering, have you learned any magic words by chance recently?
Any magic words?
Yeah. You know, like a certain word or something that might, you know, cause something to happen.
Shazam!
Obviously,
yes,
I have. Apparently that wasn't the word for you, though.
What do you mean? Is that Shazam? That's not the magic word?
Well, nothing happened for you. Or did I miss it?
Yeah, apparently I'm not a kid, so.
too
old. Yeah, too old to Shazam it.
You're too old to Shazam. They might have a blue pill for that. So how have you been, my friend?
I've been doing good, man. I've been doing good. So, yeah. Stuff's starting to happen, and we're getting kind of, things are getting busy at work, and movies are starting to come out soon. So, yeah, it's getting interesting.
Yeah, some stuff I'm excited about. Did you happen to catch that little – it was like a short Godzilla trailer that showed more of the creatures?
No.
No.
Did you notice, though, that the recent trailers, when they show the creatures, like, coming out and fighting and stuff, did you notice something?
What's that?
It's all in low light.
Oh, all right, here we go.
Just saying.
We haven't seen everything.
Does it have to be bad weather every time these guys come out? I'm just saying.
Well, I don't think it was necessarily bad weather, but I mean, you have, you know.
Watch the trailers.
Yeah,
I do want to see big monsters blowing stuff up, though.
Yeah, and it looks like lots of big monsters blowing things up. But
there's that one scene, though, where, like, I can't tell who the person is, but they're, like, walking up on Godzilla because it looks like he's on the ground or he's laying down or something. I wonder if they're going to boop him. You know, boop.
It looks like it was Millie Bobby Brown walking up to him.
Yeah. You think she might boop him? You know?
Yeah, it could be. It could be a little boop on the nose. Come on. Get with it. You got to go beat up those King Ghidorah and things like that.
So, quick question on that, if you don't mind me asking. It seems like they've teased as who the good monsters are and who the bad monsters are. It looks like Mothra and Godzilla are going to be the good monsters.
Yeah, that's pretty much the norm.
Do you think we'll get Baragon? You know, as Michael would say, the Aquaman of the monsters.
There's always hope for Aquaman too, Kevin. But you know what? We have a lot of things to talk about because, you know, we're a little behind schedule. And wow, it's April and there's a lot of stuff happening in April, Kevin.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I think without further ado, it's safe to say, let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
Well, welcome to episode 124 of Culture Clash. Of course, you're home for fandom news, reviews, and whatever crazy things Kevin Reitzel can come up with. I'm sure he's got a few today. 124, Kevin, we're moving up the ladder.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. I'm not really paying attention to the numbers anymore until we hit like milestones, you know.
Oh, you're waiting for 1 million, aren't you?
Yeah.
we might have to have like a flash forward episode or something like that.
God, how long is that going to take? I was listening to Mark Maron's podcast recently, and he did 1,000 recently.
Wow.
His podcast really took off when at the time he had then President Barack Obama come to his garage and
I remember
come that. To his garage and record his podcast. It was great.
Well, speaking of podcasts, you can not only find Culture Clash, but all the great podcasts here on the Phantom Podcast Network. And it all starts at our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. Or if you're using your mobile device, you can always download the Podbean app and search the Phantom Podcast Network. Of course, you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and also on Spotify. Just search for the Phantom Podcast Network. And of course, you can find us on Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network, or you can email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Phantom Podcast Network, on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can find me, Kyle, on Twitter at AKyleW, or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can people find you on Twitter and Instagram these days?
You can find me there at Spartan_Phoenix on both Twitter and Instagram.
And of course, we have our TeePublic store. Go to TeePublic.com, search for the Phantom Podcast Network. You can find all the gear of the Phantom Podcast Network. And just a quick note, by the time you hear this, this upcoming weekend, there will be a $13 flash sale on t-shirts. I just got
the Oh, really? Is that coming up? Okay.
So cool. Check that out. Pick up the latest and greatest gear from the Phantom Podcast Network. And of course, we love your feedback. So hop onto iTunes and leave us a review. We love those 5-star reviews, but we love the feedback in general. We want to know how we're doing.
I think it's called Apple Podcast now. I don't know if they I think that's the way it's referred to now.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah. Apple's been doing all kinds of things. So they had that big announcement here where they're doing their own streaming service and they're handling their media in a different way here.
Yeah, well, head on over to Apple and give us a shout out at Phantom Podcast Network and the review. We would appreciate a nice rated review.
Absolutely. But we got a lot to talk about, Kevin, including something that came upon us today. So are you ready?
Let's news!
Let's news!
Well, Kevin, I think it's safe to say the end game is upon us.
Broke the internet.
I definitely broke Fandango.
Yes.
Now, of course, we're talking about Avengers Endgame, who put out a little short 1-minute trailer, which I think was absolutely mind-blowing, first of all. And as well did as
we,
at about 7...
Did we... No, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, also about 7:45 this morning, ticket sales began for Avengers Endgame.
Yeah. Did you want that little extra preview to come along with the announcement that tickets are on sale? Were you fine with that? Did it give away too much?
You know, I think it didn't give away anything that we didn't know was going to happen at some point. But I'm hoping they don't do anything else between now and then. I really am not. But did you get your tickets, Kevin? That's the question, because we know that you're going to have an interesting Endgame experience.
No, I did not get my tickets because of where exactly and when I see it are up in question still, because I will be in Vancouver, Canada, the Wednesday before the preview night. So I'll be traveling there. And my buddy Andy Sloan and I are going to be partaking in the Highlander/Seacouver tour through Vancouver for that week. And we're going to be doing a bunch of reporting for our Bloody Kings Highlander podcast that I host. And so, and we're going to be quite busy doing a lot of stuff. We're going to be meeting up with some Highlander behind the scenes and a few celebrities as well. So we're kind of targeting this Sunday night, if we can, somewhere in Vancouver, Canada, to see Endgame. I'm definitely going to see it the following Friday, a week later in LA when I meet up with Aaron in LA. We're going to probably go see the Art Light Theater or something like that. But I can't buy tickets yet because I don't know exactly where I'm going to be. If I have to wait, I'll have to wait. But the trip comes first.
Yep. I got my tickets at 7:45 this morning before Thanos snapped and broke the internet.
Did you get the showtime that you wanted?
Yes, I did. I got a 6:45 showtime, which is the first showing on Thursday night, the 25th. 5th in this particular Dolby Digital theater. Of course, this has got the really nice Dolby Atmos surround sound system and the larger screen. So
okay, so I got a question for you. This movie is making news on another front because of how long it's going to be. It's going to be like 3 hours and like 1 or 2 minutes. Okay. So are you a type of guy that can hold it? Are you going to be careful? Are you going to try to break out and get a pee break somewhere? Are you going to try to stay in the whole 3 hours? What are you going
to
do?
To quote the great Gandalf the White, hold my beer.
He never said that.
I know, but it still works well. No, I will. This is the kind of movie I don't think you're going to have a chance to get up and take a pee break in. So get it all out of your system beforehand. Don't buy the supersize large. You're going to regret it because you have some experience in it.
I can usually do it for that long. As long as I get in a good bathroom break right before the movie, I should be okay.
Right before the movie, you got to clear it out and then you'll be good.
Yeah.
But all these people who are possibly complaining about this time, anybody who went and saw the extended cuts of the Lord of the Rings in the theater, I don't want to hear from you. Or if you went to, I don't know, the Star Wars marathon before Force Awakens came out, I don't want to hear
from you. I was there for that.
Or if you did the marathon, and I have done both of these. I did the Star Wars marathon, and that was the entire saga up until.
Well, I know AMC did it prior to Avengers Infinity War, and apparently either they or someone's doing a full-on marathon for all the movies.
Is that the one you could get paid for?
No. But yeah, the one I think you get paid for, you have to report from home and hashtag and do video or something weird like that. But
so let me ask you this, because I haven't seen it anywhere in any of the things. There's no Infinity War double features going on. Do you think it's because of the length of Endgame?
I don't know. That's a good point. Usually they would announce that prior to these tickets, just the single tickets going. So, I just recently rewatched it anyway, so I'm good. I don't need to do that. But not only did it break the internet, though, apparently it broke pre-sale tickets sales that were previously held by Force Awakens.
Yeah. Is there any doubt this is going to make more money than any of the Marvel films and maybe even more money than any of the Star Wars films?
Yeah, this is crazy, man. It really is. The anticipation for this is just huge. I saw a news that scalpers are selling Thursday night preview tickets, and some are going as high as $500.
That's insane. I have a feeling that if I wanted to see it multiple times over the opening weekend, I probably could. I mean, it might have to be go by myself and get a single seat, but.
Mm-hmm.
I pick my times when I go, but I will say this. I think my excitement level for this has turned up big time in about the last 2 weeks, maybe even three. About the time Captain Marvel ended and we got that stinger and at the end of Captain Marvel, the volume got turned up quite high.
I got a question for you. So my buddy Tremaine, he's a big nerd, but I love him too because he's also a fellow Raider fan, and I got to finally hang out with him when I went to the Cincinnati game this last year, and he's a huge Game of Thrones fan. He's a huge Marvel fan, like Star Wars too, and he sent me a text. He's all, dude, what are you more excited for, Game of Thrones or Endgame? And I replied saying John Wick, but Endgame comes in. Or edges Game of Thrones. This is the guy that has rewatched Game of Thrones. This is the guy that's rewatched the Game of Thrones seasons. Like he's 15th or 16 times. So he's a Game of Thrones fanatic. So anyway, what would you say?
I was going to say, that's a really good question. We should put that out as a Raider nerd poll.
That is a good question. Yeah, I'll write that down. I'll do an additional one there.
I would have to say I'm more excited for Endgame, but it's close. I think the difference being with Thrones being a season, you have more there to digest.
Yeah. So The other thing I saw too, apparently this will be Stan Lee's final cameo.
Yeah, I just did see that as well. I was really hoping that he had gotten something filmed for Spider-Man Far From Home, because I think that would have been the most fitting film for him to have his final cameo
in
Spider-Man film.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been nice.
So, well, Kevin, I have an important question for you.
Yes.
Does your Chucky doll have extra meaning now?
It does. My Chucky doll does, yeah.
Of course, for Kevin, because he is a huge Raider fan, of course, we all know John Gruden and his relationship with the Chucky doll. But now one of Kevin's other...
Hold on. Not his relations with the Chucky doll, but he's been referred to as Chucky because of the faces, expressions that he makes on the sideline. He looks like the demonic Chucky doll.
Right. Well, but now another one of Kevin's favorite actors in Hollywood is now tied into the Chucky doll. One Luke Skywalker himself, Mark Hamill, is the voice of the new Chucky for the new Child's Play film.
Yes.
What are your feelings, Kevin?
You know what? I'm fine with this. I know Brad Dourif was the voice for Chucky for years there. And I'm actually kind of excited about this. I don't know if I was excited about seeing the Chucky reboot, but now that I know that Mark Hamill's going to be the voice, I'm more intrigued to see it.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm very curious the kind of voice he'll use, because I can't imagine he'll quite go with his Joker voice, and I wonder if it'll be a little more evil sounding for Chucky.
Yeah. So, I'm curious. I'm wondering. I don't know why they didn't bring Brad on. I mean, I know Brad's old, getting up there as well. I think he's like 70, I think, or something, but, I know that, Mark's around there as well. So I don't know why they didn't go with Brad. I don't know.
Well, Brad is doing, cause Netflix is still planning a Child's Play TV series. And I think Brad's scheduled to be the voice of Chucky in that.
Oh, really? I didn't realize there was two different Chucky projects.
Yeah, apparently the Child's Play that's coming out is a complete remake.
Okay,
so we've got that going on. But now, speaking of, we were talking earlier about Endgame versus Game of Thrones. Well, apparently even George Lucas himself is a fan of Game of Thrones, because apparently he paid a visit to the set during the final season filming. So how cool would that have been?
Yeah, that is cool. I'm curious, though, what set he visited. Do we know?
I don't think it was indicated. They just said he visited the set. I would bet you he showed up the day they were filming, like, that huge battle that's supposed to be, like, one whole episode.
Right. Yeah, well, that would have been a good day to show up for sure.
Yeah. Especially when they're saying that they had to use a safe word in that battle.
yeah, that would have been cool to get a... celebrity like that on the set of checking stuff out. But do you think this has, I just came to my head. I'm not saying this because I heard things, but do you know if this has anything to do with Benioff and Weiss working on the new Star Wars project, which people think and speculate is going to be Knights of the Old Republic? Do you think that maybe they went to George Lucas to pick his brain, and maybe he came out to visit the set as a courtesy, and that relationship was started? I'm just saying. I'm speculating, Kyle. What do you think?
Kevin, I only have one thing to say about your speculation.
What's that?
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yes!
you're right.
I'm just saying, I mean, look, if I'm part half of this duo that is, you know, legendary for Game of Thrones, and now I'm working with Disney to make a new Star Wars trilogy that's rumored to be about the Knights of the Old Republic, which fans have been clamoring for a long time, I'm sure tapping George Lucas' head on some ideas would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. I'm still willing to bet that Benioff and Weiss are going to show up at Celebration next weekend. Yes, that's right. Next weekend. We're less than 2 weeks away from Celebration. I mean, how perfect would it be for them
Wait, hold on. It's not next weekend, because this weekend, it's not this weekend, which would be next weekend.
Yeah, I said a week and a half away. It's a week and a half away.
Okay, all right.
But I mean, to have Game of Thrones final season premiere and announce your Star Wars project officially.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That's a nice weekend. So speaking of interesting movie projects.
Oh, by the way, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Lucas has ties to Chicago, by the way.
Oh, does he now?
Yeah. Remember how he was trying to get that Lucas museum done in Chicago?
Right. That's right.
Because his wife has ties to Chicago, and they own I don't know if they own a house or a condominium or something, but he has ties to Chicago. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, you never know. But speaking of interesting movies, Kevin, we of course have our Suicide Squad, I guess, reboot already, which of course James Gunn is directing, and that movie, of course, with his situation has become more interesting. And it's been nothing but, for the most part, recast news. However, we at least have, it looks like, one original member from the original film joining the cast, and that is Jai Courtney, who played Captain Boomerang.
Did he die? I thought he died. Or was that the other guy that died?
It was the other guy.
The fire dude, right?
Yeah, the fire dude died.
And then that one guy in the very beginning that, he did.
Yeah, he had, like, escape things or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So we have Margot Robbie. She's expected to return too. Why is this called a reboot? I just don't get it.
It's who gets anything DC does with their films these days?
I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. I'm just going to call it a sequel until I see otherwise.
Yeah. Now, of course, the other day too was April 1st, which means it was April Fool's Day. Now, we did try to have something planned to keep our tradition of April Fool's going here on the Fandom Podcast Network. But, of course, I had my situation. And, of course, one of our co-conspirators in April Fool's hijinks was extremely ill and had no voice. So We had to leave it up to others. And I think Macy Williams of Game of Thrones may have pulled one of the greatest April Fool's jokes of all time with a little help from Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
And for those of you who have not seen this video, Macy Williams was recently on The Tonight Show, where Jimmy Fallon kept trying to get spoilers for the final season of Game of Thrones from her. And she was talking about, oh, no, you know, we all this can't say anything. And then she goes, and after Arya's death in episode 2 of the current season, and then it was just like, oh my God, what did I just say that? Oh, like, and just like tears and a panic attack. And she literally runs off the stage of The Tonight Show. And Jimmy Fallon's like, oh no, we can reshoot it. We can edit it. It's not live. We can re-edit it. And of course, she just runs off in tears, and everybody is just freaking out because she's selling it so well. And then Fallon goes running off the stage to check on her. And of course they come out behind the curtain at April Fool's. But I know a certain Australian who fell for it, Kevin.
Yes. Our buddy Adam O'Brien, host of Lethal Mullet, fell for it.
Because there is a cut of it out there without the April Fool's part.
Oh, that's so funny. That's great. That is great. That's a great thing to do. I mean, especially if it's on April Fool's. It's like, come on, guys. But hey, so, she is a good actress. So there you go.
Yeah. I don't know about the pink hair thing, though. I don't know if that's a good look for her.
Yeah, I was wondering what's up with that. So, I mean, unless it's for a role she's doing, maybe. I don't know. Just kind of curious what else that she's going to be working on. So,
yeah. Now, next up, we've seen a few things. Well, I should say we. I have been a little busy, but Kevin has seen multiple things, and he's going to tell us about it, because once again, it is time to
buy it, stream it, or unsee it.
You've seen things, Kevin, including an advanced preview.
Yes. Hey, just want to let you know, Maisie is busy, by the way. She's doing a series called Jen Locke TV series.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that. Heard about that.
Yeah. She's playing a character called Cameron McLeod. Cammy McLeod. And then she's also going to, yes, I don't know. Just says, I don't know what Jen Locke is. Right now she's down for 7 episodes. And of course she's in the New Mutants as well. She's Rain Sinclair, otherwise known as Wolfsbane.
Yep. Well, whether we have actually ever seen New Mutants is a whole other story.
Yeah. But yes, back on track though. Yes, I have seen a few things.
Yes.
Last week, I went to a special sneak peek screening they had across the country in the afternoon to go see Shazam. And so I went and took, I wasn't planning on actually seeing it, but I found myself with the time and availability. So I decided to catch, I think it was like a 2 o'clock in the afternoon show and go see Shazam. I've been organizing our 501st movie nights. And so we're going to be doing that for this Friday night. I'm actually looking forward to seeing it again. But yeah, I actually rather enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. It really was. And the whole kind of kid slash movie big comparison, I could definitely see why people are making that comparison. But there was kind of a cool little twist to that. And it actually made the experience of the film a lot of fun. And Mark Strong, he plays the villain. And what I liked about him in it was that they really dove into his backstory of why who he was, as opposed to just a mustache twirling bad guy.
Okay, let me ask you this with that, because I know we don't want to go into too many spoilers, because obviously you saw a special sneak peek. But did they go too jokey? Because that was one of my concerns, was that they were going to play this whole big angle a little too over the top in this film and a little bit too much.
I didn't come across as being, I mean, there was a lot of jokes in it, obviously, because, you know, this teenage kid who is a, he's kind of an outcast because, you know, he's, well, he's been kind of moving around in foster parents and stuff like that. And he gets these powers. And so there's a lot of kind of fun, there's a lot of fun with that in the beginning, you know, taking advantage of that. But I don't think that they overused it. I thought it was actually fun, and I was one of the things I found kind of endearing about the film.
Very cool, very cool. Now, the next thing you've seen is something I'm very interested in.
Hold on.
Hold
on, before we go to the next thing, I just want to mention to people that there is two stinger scenes in Shazam. There's one about mid-credits, and then there's one at the very, very end. Just want to let people know.
You have been informed of the stingers. Now, again, I was saying the next film you've seen is one we were talking about, because we both kind of had a feeling like it almost should have been a Netflix film.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really curious to get your take on this, because I had some actors on it I really like, and I was intrigued by what I saw in the ads, and that is Captive State.
And I think it should have been a Netflix film, if not a series, and I'll explain. So Captive State basically takes place in, I think it's Chicago, about 9 years after an alien invasion. And the aliens are very interesting looking. I got to give the movie that. But what's interesting about the film is that the aliens, even though they control the planet, they allow the humans to police their own to a certain degree, although they are capable of creating and taking justice into their own hands and killing anyone they want that gets out of hand. And so you have these people that are like the police slash FBI or whatever, that's run by John Goodman, trying to flush out this kind of splinter group of revolutionary rebels that are trying to fight back against the aliens, basically. And so it was interesting concept, but to me, I didn't get the conclusion that I wanted, and I felt there was too much kind of hanging out there, and it was kind of depressing. And I think the story would have been served better if it was more than just a movie, like maybe a limited Netflix series or something like that, because I didn't really care for the way that it ended. I didn't get closure. But one of the reasons why I wanted to see it was not just because of John Goodman, and I like him, but it had Colson Baker in it, who, a.k.a. his stage name is Machine Gun Kelly, who played Tommy Lee in the new Dirt Motley Crue movie. And he's been in a couple other things recently too, so I was kind of curious to see him in it. But Shazam, by the way, I would say definitely see it, buy it. For Captive State, I would say wait to stream it, maybe even skip it.
And then we've got one TV show here, but this is a show actually I'm been hyped to see, and I'm looking forward to being able to sit down and watch it here once I'm out of season, because I was a fan of the film that this movie is based off of, and that is the new Amazon Prime show, Hannah.
A buddy of mine at work, James, turned me on to it, actually. I had seen some advertisements for it, but you know how when you watch a lot of different streamings, you forget what streaming service is on, you know? Yeah. It's like, wait, was that on Netflix? Was it on Hulu? Or was it on Amazon? Blah, blah, blah. And it's on Amazon. So if you have Amazon Prime, you have access to this. And it is based on that movie and whatever that story, that movie, original movie, came out in 2011, starring as Saoirse Ronan. I keep forgetting how to pronounce her name.
Yeah. Eric Bana was in that movie as well.
Yes, Eric Bana. It's basically about a father who raises his daughter out in the woods somewhere, how to be basically a professional killer, you know, because that's where his background is. And her mother and what has happened to her is part of the mystery. And then there's this secret group that's trying to kill the father / and or capture the girl, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of curious about this. And my buddy James said, you know, it's worth watching. And I ended up marathoning. It's 8 episodes. I ended up watching the first 5.
Wow.
I just got sucked into it. The young actress who plays Hannah, her name is Esme Creed Miles. And she's very captivating. She's really good at the role. And Joel Kinnaman, who, as we know from the first Suicide Squad and also Altered State, is that right, Kyle?
Altered Carbon,
excuse me. He plays the father, and he's really good in this. But the young actress, Esme Creed Miles, is really good in this. And if you watch the original movie in 2011, it follows the first episode kind of follows along with how that first movie went, but it gets a little more detailed into the whole as we're going on the whole 8 episode thing, and I'm really, really enjoying this. Definitely stream it / buy it, whatever. I highly recommend it. It's really stylized. It's got really cool soundtrack. The fight scenes are cool, and it's shot overseas, so you get a lot of. I forgot where it's shot exactly, but. It is really, really cool. I definitely recommend it. Have you heard anything about this?
I've heard a lot of good reviews on this. And like I said, I was a big fan of that original film. So I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Sure. Her mother is actress Samantha Morton, and her father is Charlie Creed Miles. Samantha Morton, I remember. She's been in a few things. It's definitely worth it. I can't wait to finish the rest of the episodes.
Okay. Now, I don't think have seen yet, but I'm definitely hyped to see it. And I'm going to try to hopefully get a little time between now and the next time we record to see it so we can talk about it. But how are you feeling about what came out on April 1st on CBS All Access? And that is, of course, the relaunch of The Twilight Zone by Jordan Peele.
I have not had a chance to actually dive into that yet. I want to, but like I said, this was my priority. Also, there's something else I totally forgot to put on this this section, Kyle. I also saw The Highwayman.
How was that?
The new Netflix film starring Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson as the U.S. Marshals that track down Bonnie and Clyde. Thoroughly enjoyable. Also stream it, buy it. It's definitely worth seeing. What's cool about it, though, is it does you don't follow Bonnie and Clyde on all of their killing sprees. They show a little bit, but they don't highlight them as main characters. And it's great because it puts you on the hunt when you're with these guys that are seasoned. Marshals. What do you call it?
U.S. Marshals.
U.S. Marshals, basically, because I guess they retired that service, and then they brought these guys back out of retirement, basically, to hunt these guys down because that's what they're good at doing is hunting, you know, kind of like bounty hunters, so to speak. And it's great that you don't really see a lot of the crime that Bonnie and Clyde does because the story isn't about them. It's about these guys and they're following clues. They're following people that were either family members trying to figure out anticipate where these guys are going. But I will tell you this. I got a chance to see the real Bonnie and Clyde death car, when I was driving to Las Vegas from California one day, and there's this little city, I'm forgetting the name of it, before you get to Vegas, that has its own like casinos and stuff, and they were showcasing the Bonnie and Clyde Death Car, and I actually went to go see it. And it's amazing how many bullet holes are in that thing. And I remember seeing old pictures of Bonnie and Clyde dead in the car still. And when they were towing their car into town and people were trying to grab their wristwatches and pieces of them, you know, as they're going through town, they do recreate the famous scene when they take down Bonnie and Clyde, and they do it really well, and it's graphic.
Wow, very cool.
So yeah. you do get the payoff, but this isn't about Bonnie and Clyde doing their crime. It's about these guys and following the trail and trying to anticipate where they're going to be, because the problem is, and I didn't know this, these guys have a certain jurisdiction. So part of their plan was to try and flush them into a certain area that they had jurisdiction so they could do what they needed to do to get done.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I definitely want to check that out. So, well, with that, we got a little bit of a promo here telling you about all the other great things that are happening here at the Fandom Podcast Network. And we'll be right back with a little cult classic or guilty pleasure.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. Kyle, I was wondering if you would indulge me. I'd like to kind of just mention a couple of things that's happening on our shows that I think that maybe people that are listening to Culture Clash aren't listening to other shows, because some cool stuff's been happening, at least on a couple of shows that I've been hosting. First of all, if you guys aren't checking out Discoville, make sure you do. You know, it's great because we've had Haley, and we've had Amy from Trek FM, and we've been alternating talking about Star Trek Discovery one week and the Orville one week, and we did our big two-part episode that we had you on, as well as Davis Grayson, talking about the Orville's two-parter Identity. That was a great episode, and we're getting some great conversations there, so make sure you guys check that out. And also, I host the Hair Metal podcast, and I've had a couple of great interviews. First of all, we did a movie retrospective on Motley Crue's The Dirt, and this is the book that came out talking about all of the debauchery and the stuff that happened on the road and the personal lives of the famous heavy metal band Motley Crue. And the movie finally came out and did not disappoint. And I got Aaron on there with our friend Johnny K talking about that. So make sure you check that out. And also, I interviewed a guy that did a movie called Attack of Life, the Bang Tango movie. And Bang Tango is one of those bands that came out in that hair metal era that I was a huge fan of. And I got to interview him because, even though if you're not a fan of the genre of music, it is a great look into that time stamp and that time frame and what was happening during that time. And coming up, I have an interview with a guitar player from that band, Mark Knight, who's actually one of my guitar heroes. He'll also his episode will be coming out in the next couple of weeks, so make sure you check that out. And Blood of Kings, we've been having some fun there. I had my buddy Robert Baps, who's an old friend of mine. He's brand new to Highlander, and so I interviewed him. He saw the first whole season of Highlander in the first film and got a beginner's perspective. And one of our favorite topics that we always do on Bloody Kings is See It or Skip It. And I had John Mosby come on where we did season 4 of Highlander, the TV series, See It or Skip It. It's going to be a two-parter talking about the Seacouver episodes and the Paris episodes. And what's great is I got him to read from his own book when we did the synopsis for each episode, Kyle.
audiobook with John Mosby.
There you go. Yeah. So we got a lot of other fun stuff there on the network too. And I know we're going to be doing an end zone soon. So yeah.
Yeah. We got some things to talk about, including football leagues that might not have even lasted a full season.
Yes.
Okay. But you know what? We do have some cult classics and guilty pleasures to talk about. And Mr. Reitzel, I have a bone to pick with you.
I love this.
Yes. I seem to remember a few weeks ago somebody giving me a whole lot of grief over picking a movie that was way too obviously going to be a cult classic and that, oh, it's going to have the best numbers of any.
I'm sorry. Crawl is way too obvious, man. And I think Crawl is probably more famous than my pick.
But your pick, I think, finished with a higher percentage than even Kroll did, but it came to whether it was a cult classic or a guilty pleasure. And I think whether you would care to admit or not, I think,
well, we didn't do my pick. What are you talking about? What do you mean average? What are you talking about?
That would be one UHF.
Oh, UHF. I thought you were talking about my new pick for this.
No, week. I was talking about your pick from last, the last time we recorded because,
okay.
Yeah, fair enough. A lot of people really know UHF because it's Weird Al.
Okay, so yes, UHF cleaned up more than yes, your Crawl did. 90% cult classic and only 10% guilty pleasure.
Hey, just remember, we got it all on UHF.
Okay, so I knew that cult classic was going to win on UHF. I didn't know it was going to, like, blow it out like it did here. I thought it was going to be closer to like maybe 60 to 70 maybe, but not 90%.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I thought my pick would be a little closer in the numbers as well. And that was Batman Forever, which I knew would be a guilty pleasure, but it was 77% guilty pleasure versus 23% cult classic.
You know, when I did that post too, there were some people that really kind of shunned that film. You know, they were like saying, oh man. But I got to tell you, outside of the Keaton films, that one is still one of my favorites, man. The bad guys in that film really make it. And I love the introduction of Robin. And, but I, you know, what was funny was I put, I'm going to have to put it up later, but when I was looking at all of the Batmobiles, I think the Batmobile in Batman Forever is probably one of my least favorites.
Oh, that was ugly. The best Batmobile is still Michael Keaton's Batmobile.
I agree. I would agree. I actually have a chart I'm going to put up and get people to vote on it. But yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. So for this week, I think we've got a couple interesting picks and they kind of go in a lot of different directions here, Kevin.
Both came out the same year too.
Yeah. Do you want me to go first or would you like to go first?
No, you go first. This is, you're back. So let's have you go first.
Okay. Well, I have to give a little credit where credit's due. Kevin actually inspired this pick with a posting he had on the Hair Metal page.
Yes. One of my friends, I think it's Dan Lee, posted a video. No, wait a minute. No, I posted the video, I think. Yes. From a band, onto the Hair Metal Podcast Facebook page, a band I had heard of, wasn't really familiar with, because there's still a lot of bands from that era that I didn't really follow, but I had heard of. And that band is called Bonfire, and they had a song called Sword and Stone. I was like, where does that remind me of? And I realized it came from a soundtrack of your pick.
Yes. And of course, my pick is the 1989 film Wes Craven's Shocker. Now, Kevin, bear with me, because I have to give the storyline explanation of this from IMDb.
Okay.
Way you treated this movie, I think you have to say, is a little hard to just describe. So the storyline from IMDb, a murderous TV repairman, Horace Pinker, is killing people in a small town left and right and center. He eventually finds the home of Lieutenant Parker, who is investigating his crimes, and savagely murders Parker's wife, son, and daughter. His other son, Jonathan, has a strange connection to Pinker, though, through his dreams, and he directs his father to Pinker's business, where a small group of officers enter. Pinker escapes in a horrific spree, killing four officers and then targeting Jonathan's girlfriend, Allison. Another dream leads Jonathan and his dad to a residence where they catch Parker in the act of kidnapping. Pinker is arrested after a fight with Jonathan and sent to die in the electric chair. When executed, Pinker, who supposedly had given his soul to the devil in exchange for the power to come back as an energy source, takes over people's bodies and continues committing murders until Jonathan devises a plan to bring Pinker into the real world and then cut off his power source. Yeah. But we have a very interesting cast in this movie, Kevin.
Of course, we do.
Mainly from X-Files fame and even some Stargate fame, Mitch Pileggi.
Mm-hmm.
From Nightmare on Elm Street fame and with the connection of Wes Craven, Heather Langenkamp was in this film.
Yes.
And your hero, a very young, now more known for his directing than his acting, Peter Berg.
That's right. Yeah, but he's not the lead star, though.
No, but he is the main hero of the film. He is the guy going after Mitch Pileggi's Forrest Pinker, who is really the star of the film.
Right.
So, yeah, I've seen this many a time on the cable rounds, and I've always kind of found it as kind of just an interesting take. It's not even that scary. It's so out there, and essentially funky cast and crazy story with the ending basically them going through TV show after TV show as they're fighting basically in energy form. It's insane. There's dream sequences.
I gotta tell you, I have vague memory of not seeing it, I think, but I may have seen portions of it on TV, maybe. I don't know.
This is one I didn't see until it was on cable. But I remember there was a pretty big marketing advert for this movie when it was hit the theaters because it was credited as a Wes Craven film. But yeah, it fell kind of flat, and I gotta tell you, Kevin, without a doubt, Shocker is at best a guilty pleasure.
Okay, so this is one of those movies, to be honest with you, made more noise with the soundtrack because of who was on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And during this time, I was right in the middle of the heyday of the hair metal bands and heavy metal bands like Metallica, Slayer, and Megadeth. And Megadeth had a very popular song that was on the soundtrack and video called No More Mr. Nice Guy. And so they were like the premier band that was on the soundtrack, including the other band, Bonfire, that I spoke of. They had a song called Sword and Stone. There was a song called Shocker by the Dudes of Wrath. Another band from that time, too, hair metal area, Soraya, called Timeless Love. And then one of my favorite bands, Dangerous Toys, had a song called Demon Bell, The Ballad of Horace Pinker. Iggy Pop also had a song called Love Transfusion. Voodoo X and Dead On were two other bands they had on there. So this was one of those things where, to me, I remember the soundtrack because I remember that Megadeth video was on heavy rotation on Headbangers Ball and all the other video outlets and stuff like that. But I want to say I think I saw it, but I don't have any memories of seeing it in the theater, though.
You're probably better off.
So does this have some rewatchability for you then?
You know, it's one of those movies I find myself, you know how you just sometimes have those movies you just can't explain, but when it comes on, you tend to just leave it there. And it's not, I don't even want to call it like a couch potato theater type of film. It's just one of those movies. It's just like, it's so bizarre. You can't take your eyes off of it.
Right. So you're saying it'll fall under guilty pleasure, you think?
Oh, absolutely. If this gets even a vote as a cult classic, it's somebody who's like a huge Wes Craven fan or something like that.
Yeah, see, I was thinking it could get cult classic status for that reason. I don't know.
This is when we might need some Aaron Gill input.
Yeah, gosh, yeah, I don't know if she saw this one or not. Yeah. Yeah, okay, I would say probably, I think it will weigh towards more the guilty pleasure, I think. Yeah. Interesting pick, though. I didn't think that you'd seen this film, so interesting.
Yeah, now, you have, speaking of interesting picks, you've got one this week.
Yes, I do. One of my favorite films also came out the same year that your shocker did in 1989, and that is Best of the Best. Hot off the heels of Karate Kid and other kung fu type movies, we get Best of the Best, where, according to IMDb, a team from the United States is going to compete against Korea in a Taekwondo tournament. The team consists of fighters from all over the country, but can they overcome the rivalry to work together to win? And it has cast with Eric Roberts, James Earl Jones, Sally Kirkland, Chris Penn, and Philip Ree. Louise Fletcher is also in there as well. Oscar winner from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and also Kai Winn from Deep Space Nine. I know you've seen this film, Kyle, right?
Yeah, it's been a good while since I've seen this film. You know what's funny? When I think of this series, to me, everybody I always talk to, it seems like Best of Best 2 is the one that stands out for most everybody.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, Eric Roberts supporting probably one of the most awesome late 80s mullets there.
Oh, yeah. This does Lethal Mullet proud.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And now, what's interesting is that obviously these guys go through a lot of differences and have a hard time trying to work together, and they finally do, and they go to Korea to compete here. And there's a lot of emotional scenes in there. But what's interesting, though, is when it comes down to the sequels, they kind of go off into a weird direction. Did you see any of the sequels besides Best of the Best 2?
I have not seen any of the sequels after Best of the Best 2.
Because Philip Ree is the one that kind of takes on the mantle. Because there's Best of the Best 3, No Turning Back, that came out. Okay, so Best of the Best 2 came out in 93. Then Best of the Best 3, No Turning Back, came out in 95. And then Best of the Best 4, Without Warning, came out in 98. What's interesting, though, about these films, Best of the Best, you do get Eric Roberts back. But when it comes to the next two, you go with Eric Ree. And it kind of becomes like a Van Damme action style story.
Kevin, I just want to know, when is Best of the Best 6 coming out? Best of the Best Electric Boogaloo.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the third one. Yeah, the third one stars Philip Ree and Gina Gershon. Ernie Hudson is also in that, and Tobin Bell. What was that?
Actually,
that was
a pretty good.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's Best of the Best 4, Without Warning. My bad. But yeah, so it kind of takes a weird turn. You know, there's less kind of. I think there's more gunplay involved and stuff like that. So, Gina Gershon is in number 3. So, and Dee Wallace too.
Okay,
we've met.
So. Yeah, yeah. So, where does Best of the Best fall for you, Kevin?
I think it's going to fall under cult classic. A lot of people really speak highly of this film. It's emotional, especially when you have that final fight in Korea. And I don't want to spoil it if you haven't seen it, but there's honor involved, and the Koreans are painted as these emotionalist, kind of like Drago was in Rocky IV, you know, that, you know, losing is not an option if you're part of the Korean team there. And no mercy type of feeling going on there. And there's a lot of emotional roller coaster going on there. And I get a little verklempt when I watch that ending, you know? So I just, Best of the Best. It's just a fun movie. And funny little thing I got to mention here is where I work, there's a dojo that has like after school programs, and there's a lot of people that go in there, and like adults will go in later in that night and maybe work some kickboxing and stuff like that. And so I've talked to the owner of this guy who owns this dojo, and I asked him, I'm like, so you're a martial artist, obviously. And I forget what degree black belt that he is. And I asked him, I said, so what are some of your favorite films, karate action films? Because one of mine is Best of the Best. And he goes, that's it right there. And apparently MMA fighter Chuck Liddell, this is one of his favorites as well.
So. Yeah. I'm going to say this is going to be a close one. I really think this could be close. And then I think I'm not going to be surprised if it goes either way, but I got to lean a little bit towards cult classic here as well. I think there's just enough love for this movie to push it over the edge into that cult classic thing, because, you know, who doesn't love Eric Roberts with a mullet?
I know, right? Yeah. And he slicks it back into the ponytail, you know, and he has a slick back hair thing. So, yeah, I just, it's one of those movies that did really well on video.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was definitely a video saved the movie star. In this case.
Yeah, agreed. So,
well, with that, that kind of wraps things up for this week, Kevin. But I do want to bring up one thing, because there was a couple of pretty big fandom anniversaries since the last time we recorded. The first being the 20th anniversary of the release date of The Matrix, which I think is safe to say was a film that changed a lot of things for fandom back in the day.
I remember when and where I saw that movie for the first time.
Yeah, I actually do too. So I actually took my dad to go see it the first time I went to go see it.
Yeah, we might have to do a little 20th anniversary and talk about The Matrix and stuff. So, and then touch on the sequels and how we feel about those. And I remember I was in Norfolk, Virginia, and I remember we had some visitors in from work. And after work, we all went to go see that, and remember being blown away by it.
Oh, yeah. I was just like, what did I just see? It took me a couple of viewings to really absorb everything with The Matrix. But
yeah, I think my favorite scene in that movie was the lobby scene where they open up a can of whoop butt with all the weapons and absolutely. Bring through security.
Absolutely. And then the other one I was reminded, and because I get so busy this time of year, sometimes I forget about this one, even though it does carry a lot of emotional weight for me, and I know it does for you too as well, Kevin. Of course, it's the anniversary of the death of Brandon Lee.
Yeah, March 31st was a few days ago, and it still carries a heavy weight with me, man. I remember that vividly, and I thought it was a sick April Fool's joke when I saw the news about that. And I remember doing my pilgrimage and going up to Seattle to visit Brandon Lee's grave, because he's buried right next to his father, Bruce Lee. I remember doing that. And, you know, I always take a moment to either watch The Crow around that time as well, and as well as during like Halloween and stuff. But, Kyle, just take a moment to think about where his stardom would have taken him if he had survived that, horrible, accident on the set.
I think he becomes one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, at least in the action realm, if not just period.
And I see him. I could have seen him getting some really good acting roles too, because he had a talent for acting as well as his action.
Yeah, I think he would have started off. He would have probably continued down the action path for a few more films after The Crow, but then had taken a chance with something and probably gotten noticed for a more dramatic role in that.
Who do you think, if he had done some action films, who do you think he would have teamed up with?
Well, you know, there's a guy who I know we're both fans of that I would have loved to seen him in some movies with him. That is Mark Dacascos.
Oh yeah, Mark Dacascos. Yeah, who ironically did the Crow TV series for a season. Yeah, I think he would have become an A-lister too. I think so. In my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think he was scheduled to have a huge breakout with The Crow, and I think the sky was the limit for Brandon Lee. And
my two favorite films that he was in prior to The Crow was, of course, Big Trouble in Little China with Dolph Lundgren, but my favorite one was Rapid Fire. I thought that was a great.
Yeah, I remember when Rapid Fire came out, and that was the one where I think he really started getting noticed, and then obviously. people were just raving about everything that was going on with the Crow before that tragedy hit. And yeah. I still remember when it when it was announced, and when I caught it and they had said actor Brandon Lee had died on the set of the Crow. And it was just like a brief little news snippet on the USA Network when they were doing like quarterly news updates on entertainment and stuff like that. And I was just like, I remember just stopping and doing a double take. I'm like, what? And then like finding CNN, who was like jumping into live coverage of, you know, interviewing actors and stuntmen about this. And they spent a good couple hours talking about it. So,
yeah. And then I remember the following week, we had the full Entertainment Weekly cover about it as well, the cover spread, because I remember buying that off the news stack or news whatever. I remember there was some TV specials that came out about it, talking about it too. But yeah, man, it was sad.
Yeah. I still remember too, talking to, of course, our good friend, and I like to call him a mentor, because whenever you have a conversation with him, you feel like you're learning something. F. Braun McGash, when we asked him about the accident that happened and just how angry he gets when he talked about like the Brandon Lee situation or the John Hexum situation.
Yeah, he was very serious and passionate about gun safety, you know, and he was that's something he takes serious. So yeah.
Okay. Definitely a anniversary to this day that still affects fandom. And I think it's one of those things, if you could change the history, it would be interesting to see what would have taken place. But with that, that's going to be all of our news and reviews this week. And you know what? We got a big April ahead. We've got Endgame. We've got Thrones. We've got a lot of great things, and we're going to be here to cover them all. So as always, respect each other and enjoy your fandom.
Shazam!